Hello guys, welcome back to Talk That. I'm Natalie.
And I'm Amanda, and we are from K-Junkies on YouTube, just in case you don't know that yet.
Yeah, so welcome back to our second episode of our podcast. Don't forget to check out the first episode where we talk about ourselves and how we got into K-pop and our journey. But this episode is going to be a kind of, I feel like,
a continuation.
It's a little attachment to our first episode because this episode is going to be about second generation.
Yeah, like the second generation of K-pop. And not just like us talking about the groups per se, but like how things have changed so much from that generation to now. And even now, we're technically in the fourth generation of K-pop. So even just second gen compared to third gen is already like a drastic change. We just kind of want to go down that memory lane of second gen because things were so different.
So if you didn't listen to the first episode, me and Amanda mentioned that we got into K-pop the ending of 2010. So we were kind of not really in the beginning of second gen, but we obviously fell in love for second gen groups because that's the era we joined.
That's all we had.
That's all we had was those second generation groups.
Like, second gen was just about to end. So we were like, let's just take in everything that's happened within second gen.
And not only that, I feel like back then people would look back at older groups. So that's what we did. Like, we would research all these older groups that we missed when we got into K-pop. I feel like it's a little different now, which is a difference of the generation now where it seems that people, like new fans, don't look back at older groups.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike what we did. So that's why we're so into these second generation groups. So let's just start off by naming our favorite second generation groups. Like the groups that we got into K-pop with. And just not only the groups that we got into K-pop with, but the groups that like really, they just meant so much to us.
Yeah.
At that time. So do you want to start?
Well, like I said in the first episode, SHINee was my first K-pop group. So obviously they were a big part of my journey into diving into second generation K-pop. And BEAST, of course, my ultimate group. Oh my god, I should have made a list because like this always happens because I can literally name everybody. Like, Girls' Generation, FX, 2PM, M Black, Rainbow, Tiara, Miss A,
Kara,
Secret. Oh my god, we're just names. Goes to Wikipedia, names everybody.
For me too, like my favorite groups were like the same kind of like SHINee and SNSD were my top second generation groups. But Super Junior. I honestly like fell in love with all of them, like you said, like in Black, Rainbow, Zaya, UKISS.
Like, there was no discrimination. We just liked everyone.
Yeah, we literally listened to every like, second gen group.
So open to all the groups and all the music that they created. Oh, of course, I didn't even say Big Bang or 21.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, back then it was like, do or die, know all of them. Like, yeah. I forced myself to learn all these groups, whether they were popular groups, underrated groups, you know, more recently debuted, a little older, like, I didn't really know the difference. I was just like, gotta know them all.
You know what's funny to me, too, is that back then it was like, okay, how am I going to learn all of SNSD and all of Super Junior? I remember that was such a hassle, and then I look back at it, and I think now with all these newer groups and, like, the abundance of members that these groups have, it's like,
now I really
that was
struggle.
Nothing. Yeah, now I really struggle. That was nothing.
It's funny
back
with
then.
Girls' Generation because that's like a weird memory of mine. It was like I struggled with them for a while, and then like I just remember I woke up one day and I knew all of SNSD.
That was me and Super Junior. I woke up and I knew every Super Junior member, including Henry and Jimin.
It's like I had to sleep on it, you know, like to like, oh, I woke up. I'm like, that's Yuri.
That's Yuna. Exactly. I know SNSD now. But yeah, so. Speaking of also, like, our favorite groups, obviously some that we've named, obviously have had a huge impact in K-pop.
Of course.
Like,
K-pop wouldn't exist without second generation.
Especially, of course, you know, you got Girls' Generation being, like, the top girl group of that time. Mm-hmm. Still are nation's girl group.
They're still a household name in Korea. Like, everyone knows who they are.
Every girl trainee has to go through Into the New World. Every Produce 101 show that had girls, Into the New World.
You know, that's a good way to figure out if a song really made an impact, especially in Korea, is if rookie groups cover it, like, on a show or just for whatever. And it's like, you always see these specific songs being covered. And funnily enough, I think Mon Mon Honey by UKISS is one of them. Even though UKISS was, like, in this weird position of, like, were they popular or were they not? Like, they were technically, like, an underrated group, I guess, but they still made this big impact in Korea, you know? It was easier to make an impact back then.
Also, sure. Like, you mentioning rookie groups performing Sorry Sorry. Yes. Like, Super Junior is another group that made a huge impact in K-pop. Like, once you, when you got in second gen K-pop, you knew these groups. Super Junior, SNSD, Big Bang, 21. Which, you know, speaking of Big Bang and 21, their impact, specifically 21's impact as a girl crush group.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't really a thing in K-pop. Nope. And then 21 came out, and it was like...
They were definitely the first girl group to implement that type of concept.
Yeah, especially, like, make it their own, specifically. Then you had, like, 4MINUTE that also kind of went into that girl crushy, quirky vibes. I mean, FX is an iconic experimental group.
So experimental. Groups nowadays do a lot of weird music. Like, let's say ITZY, for example.
Yeah.
They have very experimental music. But I feel like the pioneers of experimental music, definitely FX. And, you know, being under SM, especially a very experimental company in general, like, and that's just what you expect, and they're always going to do that. But they've done it from the beginning of time.
And, of course, I also want to mention, for the impactful groups, Wonder Girls.
Of course.
And Kara.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Wonder Girls just, they were, like, the first group to really try to market themselves in America, and they did chart. And they had that record for that while before, obviously, the newer groups came in and achieved more. And then Kara, obviously, they were, like, for example, the first girl group to do Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
Which was, it's a very, very prestigious thing to do. And Kara was also just, like, Mister in general, impactful song. So all these groups, honestly, were the start of why K-pop started becoming even more popular. Yeah, international.
The Hollywood wave.
The Hollywood.
As they call it. I don't know if new K-pop fans know about that term.
I think they
term.
Still call that.
I don't know. I just still feel like I don't see it around as
Me
often
too.
As I used to. Yeah. But, like, a lot of these second-gen groups, like, even if they didn't technically do the things that some groups are doing now, it's more like those types of opportunities didn't really exist back then. But what they did achieve back then was impressive on its own. Whether they were topping, like, big charts or doing dome tours around the U.S. or something, it was still impressive. Because, like, how you were saying Kara did Tokyo Dome. Okay, well, another group that also was a really good bridge into Japan is 2PM. And obviously, like, TVXQ.
Legends.
TVXQ are, like, the top on, like, a boy group in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh my god. They're huge in Korea and Japan. Like, that was crazy.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, Wonder Girls tried branching out into America. Even though BoA is technically debuted in, like, the first gen, she obviously had an active career within the second generation. So she also tried branching out into America and had a whole full album and such. So, like, a lot of groups were doing that, or a lot of artists were doing that, even if it was on a smaller scale.
And honestly, if it wasn't for these artists, I feel like a lot of us wouldn't be into K-pop. Like,
yeah.
Now, you know, because that's how we found K-pop, was through these second-gen artists.
Yeah.
So, they definitely did leave a huge impact. Obviously, people still nowadays go back to, or as you said, groups still cover, because there's just some songs that are just timeless classics.
Yes.
So, speaking on second-gen and music. So, talking about second-gen and the music itself, there definitely is a lot of differences as fans who have been into K-pop for so long that we've seen. And definitely, I feel like the music trends of second gen were just something else,
man.
I was literally about to say
something else.
Yeah.
So weird.
One brain cell.
No, they really were. Like, and I think that's what brought in a lot of people, because it was just so interesting. But, like, you had to have a really open mind back then to, like, be interested. But I feel like if you were young, like how we were, like, teenagers when we found K-pop, we had lower standards, you would say. Like, we wouldn't, like, see this and judge it. Did you judge it?
I mean, I was into anime.
Yeah, so, like,
I don't think I could judge K-pop
if you already liked, Asian stuff.
I loved, like Barry's Kubo and Buono, like J-pop groups and Visual K. So I just could not judge what K-pop was doing because I was already into, like, weird stuff.
I didn't think it was weird. I was, like, so into it because I was like, this is so different, but it's fun. It's catchy. It's bright. And, like, it's fun to sing along to. It's fun to dance along to. Speaking on that, like, the visuals, like, concepts back then were just so weird.
So the thing with second gen compared to third and fourth gen, definitely, like, the music videos, the visuals.
Oh, yeah,
like, a lot of it was box set, really box set, like, noticeably box set studios. Like, it was just simplicity. Like, maybe there could be a story here and there. Like, you had Big Bang's Haru Haru, who had, like,
yes,
a story. But then you also had videos like
Lucifer.
Videos like Chinese Lucifer, where it's, like, in a box. Clearly just in a box. Here's a car in the back.
Here's a car, exactly.
Yeah, and here's some cool lighting effects. And, mm-hmm. You know, but it's funny because a lot of people used to complain about it back then. They'd be like, we want more intricacy. But I feel like when you get nostalgic, you're kind of like, damn, you remember those box sets?
I personally never had a problem with the box sets. I remember it always being a problem, and I said, I don't mind. You know, someone went out of their way to make that.
I didn't mind them just dancing.
The thing is that box sets still exist.
They're just more intricate.
They're just more intricate, and they get maybe, like, two or three box sets in a video, not just one or something. But those things still exist. They make them so well, and they film these videos so well that you can't really tell all the time. But, like, not, you know, back then they didn't fly to frickin' Germany to film a music video. Like, it didn't work that way. The most you would get is that they went to, like, LA or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Like Big Bang's Tonight.
Yeah.
Where they filmed
it. Or was it? No, New York.
No, they did Big Bang. Tonight was in LA. Uh-huh. And Bad Boy was in New York.
Yeah.
Big Bang was traveling everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's so, the,
like,
most of that.
Yeah. And that was more of, like, a YG thing. I think a lot of other groups didn't really do
stuff
like that.
SM and JYP were very box set companies.
Yeah.
Back then.
But, thank you. But even then, like, not just the sets, like, the concepts. Like, concepts were concepts back then. Like,
yeah.
People still use the word concept, but I feel like they don't take the concept as literal as they used to. Like, it would literally be like, the concept is this, and it was literally
I feel like a good example is, like, SNSD cheerleader concept, and then SNSD spy concept, because spy concept.
Yeah.
One concept that I feel like always stands out to me when I think of wacky concept is when Tiara did Ya Ya Ya, which that concept would definitely not
fly
now because that's super cultural appropriation. But that was a concept back then that no one really batted an eye for, because back then it was just a concept.
Theme.
Like, no one thought about the implications of it. But, like, that's a concept I think about when I think wacky concept. That was I sit here like, I can't believe they filmed a video dressed like that. Okay.
Yeah.
That was second gen.
Yeah. Like, it was like, nowadays, when people talk about concepts, they're talking more about the musical style. Mm. They'll be like, retro concept. But it would be like, the visuals are not, like, super standout retro or, like, a certain era or decade. But the song will have synths, or it would be, like, a 90s sound or whatever. But back then, if it was a retro concept, it was, like, Secret Shy Boy. It was, like, a 50s concept, and they were wearing, like, those poodle dresses and whatever.
Yeah.
Or Roly Poly by Tiara. They were in, like, a disco, and they were wearing 70s clothes. Like, it was obvious what the concept was.
I mean, that album was called John Travolta Wannabe.
Yes,
so Tiara went in with that concept.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I feel like groups, style-wise, it's more like they stick to regular styling.
Yeah.
Like, they stick to, like, really pretty clothes and, like, expensive looks, but they don't, like, unless, like, a group is really trying to emulate, like, a Western concept.
But I think they focus more on buying designer clothing.
Yeah.
It's more like, oh, this person is wearing this $1,000 dress or like shoes by whoever, designer. Back then it was like, we're wearing something that fits this concept. It's not designer.
Unless you're YG.
Unless you were YG, that was a whole other story.
They always wore Alexander McQueen.
But another thing with the concepts, like I feel like groups back then didn't really have like a signature sound type of thing. You know what I mean? Like they, when they would come back, it'd be like a whole other thing going on. Like a group would come back with a certain style, and then they would come back again with something completely different. Like they would always try to do a different concept every time. It wasn't something like this sounds like their other song but a little different.
I get you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it was like they went out of their way to do different song styles, and they weren't like known for
one
style of music. Like how like a certain group would be really good at the dark concept, and they just kind of do the dark concept. But back then it was like, one comeback is dark, the next comeback then be really cute, the next one's gonna be this. Like, they were always experimenting, which made, you know, it very, like, I guess, like, inconsistent, but in a good way. Because it always kept you guessing, and you always had, like, something different.
I feel like that's a good way to describe second gen. Inconsistent, but in a good way.
Yes, that is perfect.
Yeah, second gen was just, I felt like second gen, they were just so like all over the place, but it was such a good time that like nobody cared if they were all over the place.
The thing is that they were just having a good time, and we were just having a good time.
We were all just having a good time.
Second gen was just like, we all showed up just to have a good time.
But yeah, not only the wacky concepts, I feel like, made second gen kind of like just such a weird time, but the dancing too. Dancing nowadays, K-pop dancing, obviously has evolved a lot. You cannot compare a second gen dance to a fourth generation dance or a third generation dance. Definitely the dancing back then was a lot simplified. Obviously depending on the group, because there were still groups that like gave us hard choreo. We got like SHINee was hard, Infinite. You know, should they? I mean, even though you might look at it now and be like, oh, maybe that's not too bad.
I think back then, like SHINee and Infinite, for example, had really impressive choreography. But if you compare like the choreo of
17,
yeah, or like NCT or AT's Stray Kids to freaking
2PM's Heartbeat,
2PM's Heartbeat, or like even Lucifer, like. Like,
I don't know.
Lucifer's, like,
I don't know. Lucifer's still pretty hard.
It's not the same, though.
No, it's not the same difficulty, but it's still difficult.
Of course.
Like, I would put Lucifer still up there as a difficult dance, despite it coming from a, like, second gen. But I mean, like, if you want to, like, even, let's compare girl groups, for example.
Oh, gosh.
Like, the fourth gen girl groups, like, ITZY, Luna, GWSN, like those types of girl groups, and you compare it to like older girl groups, like if we look at Kara and Wonder Girls and early like Girls' Generation dances, the difference, Tiara, like the difference of dance level is like, what? Mm-hmm. Like definitely back then, even though obviously when we became fans back then, we were like, all this dancing is super hard. Like I learned O, that was my first K-pop dance, and I was like, this is difficult.
But the difference is, like, you have to remind people, just because those girl groups had easy dances doesn't mean they couldn't do hard dances.
No, of course not.
Because that's what people like to think. That. They think that, like, especially for girl groups, that they love doing this to girl groups. They're like, their dances are easy because they can't dance. But I'm like, no, that's just how it was back then. They just had minimal dancing.
Well, I think we could save that for another podcast episode. But yeah, definitely the dancing was a little, I feel like, questionable when you look at it now. Even though I still feel like I enjoy doing second gen dances whenever it's brought
fun.
Up. It's still fun because even though it's not like super impressive, like it's fun because you can do it. Like it's not so difficult.
And it's good too because not every K-pop fan is like a dancer.
Yeah.
And not all the K-pop fans that like to dance are on the same level as like other dancers. So like, you know, if there was easy dances like that, they can still feel included in, like, dance games and stuff because they're easier to manage and easier to follow.
Yeah, second-gen dancing was just such a good time. Even though I struggled with it when I first got into K-pop, I had a lot of fun learning those dances.
You know what it is,
then.
Though? Because I've gone back and obviously learned a lot of these second-gen dances recently. Oh, man, it's... I wouldn't say the moves are hard. The moves are not hard, but the moves are so awkward that they're hard to pull off. So, like, the level of difficulty is still there, but just in a different way.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they're not super energized and, like, crazy, but the moves are just so weird that I could still be struggling to learn it.
Yeah, for sure. And bouncing off from the dancing aspect of second gen, obviously one of the big things in the music trends, right? Especially when we got into K-pop, the years that we got into it, like 2010 and then also counting 2009, the auto-tune and the dubstep.
Yeah.
Now the dubstep
kind of bled into third gen.
Yeah, dubstep basically bled into third gen because if I remember correctly, Hyuna's Bubblepop to me was the first time I ever heard dubstep in K-pop. And that was 2011.
That was 11, but...
Which is the ending of second gen, yes. Essentially. But Auto-Tune, that was a big thing. You still obviously hear Auto-Tune in songs now.
The thing is that Auto-Tune is normal.
It is.
Auto-Tune is in every song you will ever hear. It's just a matter of how much Auto-Tune is being used. And once you learn how to actually use Auto-Tune, like, in a program, you start hearing it everywhere. Whether it's, like, really obvious or kind of, like, just on the ends of some words or whatever. But it's everywhere. And there's no harm in that because, you know, not everyone has 100% vocals.
Not only that, but auto-tune a lot is used for styling purposes.
Yeah, it is.
Majority of the time.
If it's, like, used in a random part of a song, it's for the style purpose, not because they needed it.
I mean, even if they use it the whole song, but it could be for styling purposes.
It could, because that's very much used for, like, hip-hop style. But auto-tune is pitch correction. So, like, if it's nothing's being corrected, it just kind of makes it all out of whack.
Yeah.
So, if you listen to any K-pop song, like, any K-pop song from, like, 2010, oh, man, the whole song is auto-tuned. Then for what?
Because the styling, and I feel like... Like, second gen, there was just this era where everyone was using auto-tune.
Like immensely. Like,
FX2,
yes.
You know, YG, a lot of the time. Like, 21, and Big Bang used it a lot. Yeah, it was definitely, and it was definitely a styling thing. I feel like now, it's funny, because nowadays I feel like I see fans, you know, kind of, like, arguing about auto-tune usage. I mean, it's not a big deal as long as the idols can obviously sing the songs normally anyways. Like, it sounds fine live. Auto-tune, again, is just for styling purposes. And second gen, I feel like auto-tune was used so much that sometimes when you hear songs now with auto-tune, you're like, I remember. Like, this kind of reminds me of second gen because...
Yeah. Tiara had a lot of auto-tune. And 4 Minute, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Beast 2 and Shock.
Oh, yeah.
yeah. If you want to even go even more into it, Shiny's Wow Wow Wow. That song is drowned in auto-tune.
Yes, it is.
But it was just, you know, it wasn't. That's on the Lucifer album. It was just what it was back then. You still hear it now, obviously. But I feel like fans kind of pay too much mind to it now.
So if the auto-tune is there for like, styling purposes, I don't really care. Like, if it's, like, the whole song is normal and then suddenly the rap comes in and it's got a little auto-tune, I understand why. If a song is overly processed and, like, the vocals are drowned out, that's a whole other story. So, like, I can't really be like, yeah, that's auto-tune just because. Like, no, this song doesn't fit that. Maybe it shouldn't have that. But that's different. Like, if it's for styling or if it's because they really couldn't sing in that pitch.
Yeah.
The music of second gen was just a time.
It was a time. I think about it. And sometimes when I listen to the second gen music now, I'm like, man, this was really a song, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you play Zaya's Mazel Tov, I just still can't believe that song's a thing.
It's not just the auto-tune, it's just the song.
I mean,
the song in general.
Second gen songs just have such a quirk to them that, like, no matter how weird it sounds now, you still love it.
Like, no, I do.
I remember
because
this.
It's nostalgic.
Yeah.
Inconsistent, but in a good way.
Inconsistent, but in a good way. Moving on from the music trends of second gen. I feel like a lot of people, when they think of second gen, they think of the variety reality shows and the music shows back then and how it functioned, how it's so different now, the shows. You know, back then we used to have Hello Baby, which was a show where a group had to take care of a baby. And that show, I mean, if you ever want to check out, like, Hello Baby, you should watch Chinese Hello Baby. That's the most iconic Hello Baby. And not only just Hello Baby, but like Star Golden Bell, Star King. Those were shows where like, those shows were just so random too. Because it would just be like a random gathering of different idols from different groups. Like you have Taemin from Shiny and Yoodi from Kata and Jun from MBLAQ. And it's just like, do this weird thing. Dance to this. Rip your pants, you know? Like,
Inconsistent.
Inconsistent, but...
You got some gold moments from those shows. Because, like, they were just so random that some of the most iconic K-pop moments just happened on these shows.
I mean, basically what I just referenced with the ripping pants was Jun from MBLAQ ripping his pants when he did Sistar's Push Push, which if you go to YouTube, you could find that video. Iconic. Taemin and Minho salsa dancing?
Oh, iconic. My God. Or, like all these groups would just, like, I don't know which shows specifically, I can't, like, name, but I know, like, these groups would just kind of, like, there'd be a bunch of groups on a show, and they would just all do, like, dance performances, like, really random dance performances, and, like, just seeing the reactions from all the other idols, and, like, you know, we all knew who they were, because they were all familiar faces, because there were so many, like, less groups at the time.
If you all ever want to watch some iconic performances, I definitely would recommend Teen Top doing Secret's Shy Boy. And that really iconic Orange Caramel cover that, like, Sungjung from Infinite did with Donghun from Zaya. I forgot the third person that partook in that. But that performance, that was, like, some of the weird, quirky stuff
or, like, doing these shows. Or, that performance of G with Taemin. I don't remember who else was in that. Oh, man.
That's, like, basically music show specials. We'll talk about those, like, the Gayo Dejuns back
those
then.
Those weird music show specials where they would switch
there was
songs.
Kind of a debate now, but...
What?
No, like, that guy groups would always... Like, when they would do girl groups, they would obviously do it in a more joking manner. When the girl groups would cover the guy groups, they would do it in a more serious manner. For the most part.
Yeah.
I feel like usually... And that's still kind of a thing today that I know a lot of people are very...
Yeah.
Back then, it wasn't that serious.
Yeah.
Like, back then, no one took offense to the fact that guy groups were kind of doing, like, girl groups really funny. And then the girl groups would obviously do guy groups more serious. I don't know why that's always just been a thing. Back then, it wasn't that big of a deal.
Well, like, looking back, like, the G one I was mentioning, they weren't, like, being comical on purpose.
No,
it was more like what they were wearing was so dumb that, like, it was funny.
But... there was, like, this, I don't remember what music show it was, but the music show special where it had, like, a ton of groups and they all switched around songs. Like, it was, like,
I saw it, that one on Twitter recently.
No, well, that one. That's one of them. That's them performing, like, that was, like, all them crowded on a stage. That's when Shiny did Lady Gaga in trash bag outfits.
Oh, my God.
That's what I remember the most. But I'm talking about the one where, like, Beast and 2PM doing Kara's Mister.
Mm-hmm.
And the iconic Heartbeat performance that had Kahi, Hyuna.
Blanking.
But, like, iconic girl group members doing Heartbeat. That was iconic.
Yeah.
I feel like you don't really see that as often as you see.
I feel like once in a blue moon we get these types of covers. Like, Stray Kids covered a girl group song.
They did Fancy.
Fancy.
Fancy. That was... Well, when ATEEZ did Sherlock, that was awesome, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely do love seeing when younger groups cover older groups.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing that because you kind of hear a new take of the song. But I feel like in the sense of, like, group unity and, like, mixing up all these groups, they were a lot mixed up back then.
Yeah, I think it's not so much that the groups are not doing these special stages. It's more like...
Just different.
Artists are not being, like... scrambled together as much. You don't see large groupings of artists on stage, like, just acting like fools and singing along to each other's songs and dancing around.
Yeah, I feel like that was more prominent back then.
Yeah, a little more. But I think it's also because, like, the industry was so much smaller back then that all these artists knew each other personally for the most part. But not everyone knows each other anymore.
Sorry, going back to the variety shows,
uh-huh.
Someone mentioned it, that when you asked on Instagram, someone mentioned the Maknae Rebellion show. And I loved that show so much! That show had, like, a bunch of Maknaes together. Like, Taemin was on there, Song from FT Island was on there.
Was Mir there?
Mir was there, yes. I believe Mir was there. Not only that show, I just thought of another show, like, Dream Team. I feel like you don't see Dream Team much anymore. And that
is
was
that
like,
still around?
I don't even know. That was like athletic idols just going at it. Running Man obviously is still a thing.
Yeah.
You still see Running Man. There was that one show. I was like going to school. All I remember was N Black going to school.
What's the show that they're kind of like set up in? It looks like a classroom, I think. And they're all set up in a youth formation.
Oh my god, I know exactly what you're talking
about. And they did some weird stuff.
I know what you're talking about because that show.
I know. There's like an iconic Yosup video from that.
I know exactly. It's where they wore the blue and the pink. That's where Simon D did some iconic stuff. Because that's where I know Simon D a lot from that show. And Honky and stuff from FT Island. Bro, I don't remember what the show's called.
I don't remember either. I bet I could find it really quick, though. Hold on. Oh, My School.
Holy.
God, the things they would do on these shows, like, were just so crazy.
I think that's a show where they had to, when they would sing a Korean song, they'd have to change the lyrics.
Yeah.
Like, for example, the iconic one that has Onu, where Onu, like, flies back. It's basically they sing into a mic. And they have to turn the English phrase into Korean. So they did Hurricane Venus. And when it got to the part where Boa goes, you know,
Electronic Manic Supersonic
Bionic Energy, they had to do it in Korean. And Onu goes flying back because the wind that shoots out of the mic when you're wrong hits him. And he's like, woo!
That's hard.
Yeah.
Is there even Korean words?
I think there is, but it was strong because it's not the same. The syllables aren't the same.
It's crazy.
But there was like N Black going to school is another one. Because it was N Black trying to learn English. That was a good time. That's where the popular, iconic Wafer. Amir's Wafer line came from.
That was my text tone for a long time.
And the one day N Black got a house. Sorry, we're going down memory lane and
there's so many like variety shows and like really iconic things and like I forget the names of the shows.
Oh yeah, it's like, been a long time.
Because I didn't like watch the shows like full episodes, but like, you know, like they would be clips on YouTube and it would be like part one
in 480. Yes,
it's so bad.
Sorry,
we Spanish like, subs.
we sound like old viejas talking about the good old days. That's us touching upon some of the varieties and music shows. There's a lot, like obviously we don't remember everything because it's been such a long time since we've thought about these shows or like talked about these. One more thing I wanted to mention that Second Gen did, which I feel like I would love to see it as like which I feel like maybe has been done. It does get done, but not to the extent that this was done.
Yeah.
There's something called the Color of K-Pop Project, which was, it was like four groups and they got different idols from different groups and put them into one.
Like project groups.
Really small. And they released a song and it was like a whole end of the year special where all these groups performed. And they had Dynamic Black, Dramatic Blue, Dazzling Red, and Mystic White. The red and white were girl groups and then the black and blue were guy groups. And it was like iconic idols from their groups and then put into like mixed up into with different idols. So like Dazzling Red had like Hyodan from Sistar and Hyuna from 4MINUTE. And Mystic White had like Sunhwa from Secret. I'm trying to remember because it's been a while. Dynamic Black had freaking Kikwang, Eljo, I believe. And then the blue one, Dramatic Blue, had like Jokwan, Neil from Teen Top, Yosup from Beast.
Hoya, bro.
Hoya wasn't
And not just that, the songs were just really good.
Oh, the songs were
the songs
amazing.
Were so good.
You guys should listen
so,
to
like,
those
it
songs.
Was so like cool, like seeing, because like obviously a lot of artists nowadays collab. But getting like these project groups like at all at one time with these great songs, it was so cool.
You know, I think the thing is they do mix up idols nowadays, but only to cover songs. For example, the Red Velvet Psycho cover that had Hyunjin from Stray Kids and Daehui. These different idols do get together, but it's not like they don't make a project song, you know, like the Color of K-Pop
That's basically like the special stages.
Yeah.
That's just a whole other thing. But like a whole like original song being created with different idols from different groups into a studio recorded song.
Yeah,
it's a whole other thing. So like it was just so cool. And like back then, you know, it was probably easier because they used multiple members from like one group.
Yeah,
that's how little popular groups I guess there were. So like they had multiple Beast members and multiple Teen Top members. If you did that now, you would need like 20 project groups.
Honestly, though, I would love to see a color of K-pop now with, like, the fourth gen groups.
That'd
like,
be so cool.
Like, could you imagine, like, Ryujin and Olivia from Luna, like, in one team, or, like... I mean, that's I'm still powerful. Waiting for a BTS EXO collab somewhere, so...
Oh my god!
K-pop, let's get to it.
For real, and that'd be, like, a really cool way to, like, show some more unity at, like, an end-of-the-year special. Or... Yeah. But it has to... It can't be, like, an award show. It has to be,
like, a Gaode-jun, yeah.
Because not everyone goes to award shows anymore. That's a whole other thing. Award shows are just so different, too, I feel.
Yeah. Let's not get into award shows. And speaking of, like, the unity of the groups back then, even though obviously there is unity now because a lot of groups are still friends with each other, it's not like there's a weird, sudden division. But I guess a lot of people are always like, oh, the groups felt more unified back then. And I feel like also the fan base, the K-pop fan base in general, was not as stressful as it is now. Yeah. I feel like maybe because of also like the usage of Twitter and stuff, it's become a bigger war zone when it comes to fan
bases. Well, I mean, it's just like the fact that the K-pop fandom has just grown.
Yeah, it has.
Because like, if we're talking about Korean fans, that's a whole other thing because Korean fans have always had the one group mindset.
For the most part, yes.
For the most part. Yeah. So like, that's like a whole other thing. Like, but if we're talking about international fans, you know, around that time, it was just, everyone was just like, we like all these groups and we're just having a good time. I have no reasoning to pin this group against this group. Like, I felt like no one did that. You know, obviously there were fan wars, especially with the big groups.
I mean, who could forget about the iconic Soans versus Blackjacks?
Yeah, or Elfs.
Versus VIPs.
Yeah, so like, or Elfs versus Soans.
Oh,
or that was a whole other thing, too, for no reason. The pinning of one group to another is so much more crazy now.
It's because of social media, especially on Twitter, where people write, like,
not just social media, it's about records and views.
Well, no, but I mean, like, social media is where people open up with their opinions, and it's more prominent now because of Twitter usage, where, like, people are, like, pinning groups against each other, and, like, I was saying, like, records and views and, like, sales and charting has become so much more of a big deal now.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, you know, before EXO even came along, album sales were not something that groups really strived so far for.
Not like that, but I feel like as fans, we didn't really pay attention to album sales
No,
either.
Because it was not something they really talked about. Like, it wasn't something, like, I didn't get into K-pop and was told, like...
About
album sales. Like, I had no idea. I was just like, I want to buy this album just to have it. Like, I wasn't like, I'm contributing to album sales. Like, I didn't think of it that way until EXO came along and they were like, oh, million seller, and they
boosted physical sales.
They boosted, yeah, like, the drought was over with the physical sales. Now it's normal. Like, groups do focus on album sales because it is really important now for, like, for stability and global recognition. And all that, and charting is so big, because back then I was like, I don't know what a chart is.
No, you know, back then too, I feel like streaming wasn't really too much of a thing. No, now it's like, people are like
music video streaming or single streaming?
I mean, both.
Because the thing with the music videos is funny, because YouTube didn't really have a big part on K-pop videos back then. Remember when videos came out on Naver?
Yes.
Like, it would come up on YouTube, but the views didn't matter. No one was like, stream this video. It needs to make it to this amount of views. Like, no one looked at the views. I never looked at the views.
Me neither.
And so, like, I was like, the video comes out on Naver, that's more important. Like, I had the mindset of, like, it doing well on Naver was more important.
I think what you mentioned with YouTube. Yeah, YouTube bridged international fandom into K-pop, because we would not be able to see these videos if it wasn't for YouTube. But now I feel like YouTube views are counted a lot more now. Like, music video views are counted a lot more now. Streaming the songs, it's like
YouTube crazy. YouTube views count for music show wins now, right?
I believe so.
That wasn't the criteria back then.
I don't remember. Or maybe it was Naver. I didn't even know the criteria of winning music at music shows back then because I didn't care.
Yeah.
Like, I only, when we got into K-pop, it was mostly, like, music. I mean, I love this music.
Also, that's another thing I think has changed a lot with the wins is that I feel like groups won more often, like, sporadically. You feel me?
Now these groups are all winning the same
Yeah, like, the same group will win every day, every music show. Like, 13 wins in a row. But back then, it was like, Beast wins today, and FTL will win tomorrow. It was so random. But I think it's because it had to do with... The criteria was different. So, like, I don't know. But it wasn't like you knew who was gonna win.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes groups win now, especially on the show. Like, then I'm just like... Oh, didn't expect that group to win today, like, compared to someone else who was promoting.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the same way.
You know? But I'm like, okay, I mean, you know, it's great, but I don't know. Music show wins have always been, like, a symbol of you're getting somewhere.
You've made it.
People are paying attention to you. Not that you've made
it. No, not that you've made
it. Because a lot of groups have won and went downhill immediately.
Grandpa.
Yeah, so music show win does not mean you're suddenly popular. It means that, like, you're kind of noticed, but you need to keep that going. You need to keep at it. But music shows are strictly for promo.
Well, they do it, like, for a week or two.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we're done.
Yeah, but it's not really necessary for the big groups. But I don't know about back then. I feel like big groups promoted anyway. But I don't know. That's, like, things could have changed a lot because it's not like we know how much it costs to go on a music show and stuff. So, like, that's all. There's so many things that obviously we're not going to know.
We're only speaking on behalf of our experience.
Yeah.
As second gen stands and then going into K-pop, into this generation.
That's definitely something, like, the whole, everything we just talked about views and streaming that I do miss in the case of, like, I wish we could all kind of enjoy the music that our groups come out with without feeling like you have a job to do when the song comes out. Which, like, yeah, that is kind of your duty as a fan, but people take it very extreme.
I also miss kind of just, like, when groups would do anything or release a song. Like, it wouldn't be like, oh, this song flopped or something. Even though obviously, again, fan wars still existed back then, so you obviously still had some fans from certain groups comparing groups. I feel like nowadays it's even, like, worse. Like I just wish sometimes people would just enjoy the music and not worry so much about how many views it got in the first 24 hours.
Yeah.
How many sales was the first day sales and then comparing, you know. But things evolve. We get newer fans. It's just the attitude changes as the generation.
Like, that goes into the conversation of how people think that every comeback has to be super grand. Whereas, like... sometimes we're just happy that this group even just came back, because some groups just take forever to come back, and I'm just like, I will take what I can get. Like, or, you know, not every comeback has to be super serious, and not every comeback has to be, like, over the top, you know. In the end, it's the music, and if you enjoy the music. So, like, I just want to enjoy the music without feeling like you're being pressured to stream, or this song sucks, your group sucks. Like, or just let me enjoy my music.
Let's just all enjoy things.
Let's all enjoy
it. We want to. If you don't like it, just ignore it. So yeah, we kind of went a little heavy there.
At the end,
we're like, let's get serious. But no, I think in the end, like, I hope whoever's listening, whether you're a second gen stan or a stan of now, like the generations now, that you kind of learn something new, and maybe you will go back into listening second gen, like exploring second gen if you're not from that era, and you see why they were kind of the stepping stone for how K-pop got to where it is now. Because if it wasn't for second generation groups, K-pop would not be what it is now. It
would barely exist. And this goes for anything. Like, nothing will exist right now if the previous generations didn't exist. It's like an iPhone. You wouldn't have your current iPhone if the previous crappier generations didn't exist.
Crappier,
but were great at the time. Because
inconsistent, but
in a good way.
Inconsistent, but in a good way. That's basically the wrap-up of the second generation podcast talk. Second generation was inconsistent, but in a good way.
And I loved it.
Yes, we loved it. And if it wasn't for second generation we wouldn't have the greatness that is third gen and fourth gen, going into fourth gen now. So yeah, we hope you guys enjoyed our kind of little, like, ranting and blabbering and just walking down memory lane that was second generation, which was such a simple time when we got into K-pop.
Mm-hmm. And make sure to follow our podcast so that you get updates for our next episode. And who knows what that topic will be about.
There's just so much to talk about when it comes to K-pop.
Yeah, and make sure to follow us on social media. We have an Instagram, which is @K_Junkies. Follow our YouTube channel, K-Junkies. And if you want to have some podcast benefits, make sure to check out our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/K-Junkies.
Thank you for listening to Talk That. We'll see you in the next podcast episode. Bye.
Bye.